This is episode one of Stories of Albania. Welcome to Stories of Albania. My name is Ryan McDonald, and about a year ago, my wife and I moved to Albania as missionaries. Our time so far has been filled with great memories and even better people. So, each week, I want to give you all a little glimpse into what life is like here through the eyes of born and raised Albanians. So, with me today is a good friend of mine, and he's a wannabe theologian. I would say he's well on his way. So, with me today is my good friend, Sergi. So, Sergi, can you just tell me a little bit about who you are?
Well, apart from being a wannabe theologian and the fact that I've been born twice, I'm just an average Albanian Joe. I grew up in a small village. Ever since I was a child, I liked asking questions. I liked to know about things and think about things. I loved reading. And I was always curious about how things work, how the world works, and like, is there a God, or are there any gods, or what is the supernatural like, if it's there, and can it be there? Is it reasonable to believe in supernatural things? And I was always like reasonably skeptic, I would say. I somewhat believed that there could be a God. I guess I always believed that the possibility of there being a God was always reasonable. But I never supported the idea of organized religion or belief in an unquestionable doctrine of God growing up, of course.
Yeah, was that something your parents talked to you about at all, or?
My parents were generally very open-minded, and they wanted me to grow up having my own ideas. I think they did a great job with that. They always let me be an independent person. So I think that had a lot to do with it. And they were supportive of everything I did most of the time. And they let me make my own choices.
So what would a regular day look like for you when you were growing up?
Mm-hmm. As a teenager.
As a teenager, yeah.
Well, I would get up 5 minutes before school time started because I lived close by and I didn't get along with the other kids really well. I wasn't too sociable. Like I was, most of the time I was inside my own head, and the other kids wanted to make a mess. I wanted things to be ordered. So I didn't, the more I grew up, the less I got out of the house. But everyone respected me nonetheless. I wasn't picked on, mm-hmm. as a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't bullied very much. But I did have this idea that there was this idea, I think, both with that I had and that others apparently also had, that I was just sort of the kind of guy that needed to be left alone.
Mm.
So I found solace, I guess, in reading.
Yeah. Did your parents, did they read with you?
No, there wasn't so much of a reading culture in our home. But there were always, or especially as I grew up, they encouraged me to be a learner, to do well in school and stuff of the like. I think by the time I was like my late teen years, they were encouraging me more and more to do less of that. And as a rebel, I did the opposite. Maybe that's what it was. I always thought that they were encouraging me to get out more and study less, so that knowing that I would do the opposite. And I always thought that it satisfied me both ways. I was both making my parents happy and being a rebel.
Sounds like not much has changed. Is there, like, when I don't know, I'm working on I'm getting my master's in counseling psychology, and yesterday I had to send in my first topic for a research paper. And I used a little example from my parents. My parents taught me the topic that I'm writing on has to do with masculinity. And I used this idea. I remember when I was a kid, my parents, they always told me like to hold the door open for the girls when they walked through.
Be a gentleman.
I was always taught that. What, off the top of your head, what were things like that that your parents taught you or expected of you?
My dad, I think, mostly wanted to... He was proud of me because of my results. He didn't want me to be strong. Because I guess I was a little bit too... Like, in my mind, I had an idea of things that work. Like, there are rules that you ought to obey, and there are laws and so on. So I wouldn't... at least for my own self, I would try to stay within the guidelines and be obedient and so on. And I always disliked bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And I never wanted to be a bully. And I actually pitied bullies. My dad was a bit, I think, worried about that. He wanted me to be able to stand up for myself. And if it came to a fight, he wanted me to be able to kick the other guy's butt. I never imagined ever going to a fight. It seemed the most unreasonable thing to do. Like, why wouldn't you, even if you couldn't work things out verbally, it's like, fine, let's just drop it then. I never imagined that I would need to be physically, like, to physically engaged in a, what do you call it, a fight?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever.
Fight.
Yeah. Anything of that sort of thing within that. I never imagined that I would descend to that level. But now that I look back at it, sometimes I think... Because we live more and more, I'm convinced, in an imperfect world. I guess I'm more convinced that sometimes the right thing to do is to get in a fight. Or if you do get in a fight, the possibility of an actual physical threat, I think, is more real to me now. Mm. Partly for theological reasons.
Mm.
We do live in a fallen world. And you have to be prepared for that. You can't just... wait for God to put an invisible shield on you when you're being punched or shot at. So,
yeah.
So I guess there is a little bit of change in that, in my mind. Because I grew up believing, even on the simple things, I actually grew up thinking that, partly because of things that I've read or things that were advertised by most of the common modern thought, is that... is this equal idea for men and women. Is that fine? You shouldn't do things that are sort of degrading to women.
Mm-hmm.
Or consider them as equals. And I always thought of that as, well, that makes sense. I mean, why would it be different? For example, if you'd go on a date, and why is it... what always expected that the guy should pay.
Ooh, this might be a sore subject for some of our listeners.
Actually,
so.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I don't believe that now. I'd be perfectly willing to pay now. But, or things of like that sort of reason, that seemed reasonable. They made sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is it that there are these specific roles? Why does it have to be that way? Both males and females are people.
Yeah.
So... now more and more I realize that it's not necessarily like that. And that the roles have a function. They have a reason for being that.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we do things a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But I always like to be against the established order.
Well, trying to sway this conversation back to specifically Albania. let's see. Growing up, my family, my parents were very family oriented. For example, I was homeschooled. So I, as a kid, felt like all I did was hang out with my family. Like, that's what I felt like. But my parents, they didn't see it that way. So like every Friday night, it would be family night. When I would think, well, it's Friday night, I should go hang out with my friends. It's like, no, this is family night. We would play games or watch a movie. Did you have anything like that during the week with your family, or you play games together? What sorts of things went on during the week?
When it comes to family time, things that we did were mostly like, or things that were like my happiest family moments are probably travels to the highlands or mountains or picnics, that sort of thing that we did. I'm not sure if people do that anymore. We definitely don't. Life just got busy and we're just not, I guess, there anymore.
Yeah.
Like we grew up and so on. I guess mostly during the week, I wasn't very, very connected with my family growing up. I didn't have arguments or fights or, like, I didn't have bad relationships with them. We always got along and I always loved mom and dad. I always trusted them, I always looked up to them, but other than that, I guess I wasn't the sort of guy that opened up a lot.
Yeah.
Or
something I've noticed, and you can tell me if this is accurate, but for example, in America, you're not going to be seeing little kids just roaming the streets. Here in Albania, you see kids all over the place, all ages, running around doing their own thing. It seems like, as far as parenting goes, the main mindset of parents is to kind of create like independent individuals. Mm-hmm. Would you say that is accurate and that's what you experienced?
It is. I hope it still is. It definitely was as I was growing up. It was expected that we go out and play and get hurt and so on.
Yeah.
So they were worried. Of course, grandmas especially, extremely worried. And they still are.
Yeah.
I think less now, people, especially younger kids, they tend to spend more time in more indoor spaces, be it gaming centers or that sort of thing, or just at home playing games.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still largely, most of the time, they're still outside and they want to do stuff.
Yeah.
That's what kids want. They want to go out and play. That's why we have so many kids that come to church. Whenever we could keep the church open, it was always full of kids.
Yeah.
Like, and we had two Bible readings and a Bible study for junior high, the junior high age during the week. But they were still there every single day, even when we weren't doing anything.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So they just wanted to get out of the house and do something. I like that.
Are there any, I mentioned my family, we would have like game nights. Are there any Albanian, like traditional Albanian games that you grew up playing, or what types of games did you play when you were growing up?
There are some card games, the games that you play with the normal poker card deck.
Yeah. Played a lot of football, soccer.
Yes, obviously.
You played basketball a little bit.
Oh yeah, I did. I was actually part of the junior high team back when I was playing.
That's awesome. Made a lot of threes.
Yeah, I was more of a forward position. I was the tallest at the time. Wow. Actually, in growing up, I was really tall.
5'4", by the way, everyone.
I got tall really soon.
Yeah.
But then I sort of just remained at that height.
And then you've been shrinking.
I know. Right? Yeah, it's weird. All of a sudden, everyone's taller than me. I saw that my coach saw that as an opportunity for me to involve me in a more, like, playing in a center or in forward positions in basketball.
Yeah.
I love playing it. It made me feel so much better. I always look forward to the days that I could practice.
Yeah.
And I sort of kept my life in order.
Mm-hmm.
When I started high school, which is, here's like the 10th grade, I dropped it.
What? Why did you drop it?
Well, I got into a fight.
Got into a fight?
Yeah. I don't think I've gotten into any other fight in my life. That was the one time. At that point, I had gotten really good, especially on defense. Like, if I had defended another player, they did not get the ball. If they did, they did not score or do anything useful for their team.
Yeah.
So there was this guy that was on... We were just playing a random practice game. And there was this other guy that I was defending. It was like, get away from me. Don't defend me. Like, stop it. But I had to because he was the weak point of the team.
Yeah.
So it was the winning strategy. Anyway, he got really mad and he just punched me.
Huh.
Never been punched in my whole life. Seriously, I had no idea what to do. And so
you quit?
I give it some thought as I was walking back home. And I didn't think that there was anything else to do.
No.
So I just quit.
That's the story.
It's a sad story.
The beginning and the end of your basketball career.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't angry, or I was angry, but not so much as disappointed
mm-hmm.
at humanity.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I was very philosophical at the time. Obviously, not anymore.
Yeah, not at all. Well, you mentioned basketball. And you mentioned that you kind of kept to yourself a lot.
Right.
Did you have any good close friends that you hung out with?
If I did, I didn't, as I said, I didn't open up a lot. So I did have a lot of friends that I did stuff with
mm-hmm.
and talk to, but I wouldn't talk about the deeper things, or I always kept to myself.
Yeah.
And I always had guards up and
mm-hmm.
I guess I did keep a journal for a while, but I always coded it.
Oh.
Like, I never write things exactly the way that happened.
Yeah.
I always covered them and
it's always
changed
opposite
them.
Day in your journal.
Oh, yeah, right. The
today
opposite
was the
day.
Best day I've ever had.
Or that, or other things like, I changed names of people, obviously, even my own name. And
what was your name? Am I allowed to ask? I probably won't ever read your journal.
It's
probably.
Okay. It doesn't exist anymore. No, I burned it.
You burned it? Wow.
No, I always burn my journals.
What's the point of having journals then?
I'm not sure. Well, it was Alex.
Alex?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you, Alex.
You too. You know, from Alexander the Great?
Ah.
Anna. I read his biography, I think, by some Italian historian. By the time I started, so that's why.
Wow.
I think.
So, just thinking about Albanian history,
mm-hmm.
One of the major and most talked about things when it comes to Albania is the fact that it was under communism.
Mm-hmm.
So, you were born after,
right?
Obviously,
I'm not that old,
but
maybe in my head,
maybe in your head, but. What are, have you experienced any of, well, the, what would you say are some of the effects that you feel mm-hmm. growing up here from communism?
Well, one thing that I would say, or that I would point out, it's actually an interesting fact. I think that the best art, or the best period for Albanian art was under communism.
Hmm.
I'm not sure why.
Hmm.
Albanian modern art just sucks. It's just... It's just so bad. And they still mostly play the movies of that time.
Hmm.
Like, normal, like, or newer Albanian movies are just so bad. They've taken into this sort of, I don't know how to say it, this French-type postmodern film theory
mm-hmm.
that they've adapted to, and it's garbage. Also,
Sorry.
The books that have been written are either about communism, the best ones, or from communism time.
Hmm.
So for some reason, the best generations of artists were lived during that time in Albania,
hmm.
especially compared to now. Other things, I don't think that it has is good. They might say that things were better at the time, and that people were more preoccupied and had more things to do, and they were suffering, but they were happier. There are many people who would say that, but overall they wouldn't want communism back.
Did your parents talk about living under communism at all?
They did. Dad has some stories, but he doesn't, he's not fond of it.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the difficulties and how to get away from the harsh communist regulations.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people did. But then again, he's not very fond of it.
Mm-hmm.
So people generally, I think, are not... Like, they may look back and say and think there were happier times, but I think people always do that
mm-hmm.
as they get older. Older. It's affected Albania in the sense that they think, they believe that communism, and that's where things got really harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were 8 siblings, and it was only my grandma. And 2 of them were, I think, was it 2 or maybe? 1 or 2 of them were already married, but it was still, there were really hard times for them,
mm-hmm.
for the family at the time. And dad had to, he worked for a while. He had to study and live far away from family or walk long distances. But it was hard.
Yeah.
And after that, he went to Greece and a lot of things happened. Before that, I think he did his military service, which they removed, sadly. I think I like the idea of a military service.
Yeah.
Mm. You both serve the country and yourself. You get more discipline and so on. Because the people who've been in the military are like that. They're disciplined. They have good stories to tell. But they removed it, I think, 2007.
Yeah.
They removed the law.
So, you mentioned good stories to tell.
Mm.
And you mentioned that you love reading.
Mm-hmm.
If, let's say you could only have 3 books... You're only allowed to have 3 books. What books would they be?
What a horrible world would it be? If I could only have 3 books?
I'm sorry.
Okay. So, apart from the Bible,
mm-hmm.
so 3 other books.
Let's just say, yeah. automatically get the Bible. Or let's just say you've memorized the whole thing. It's written on your heart.
Okay.
So you get 3 other books.
3 other books. Well... I think one that has to be there was one of the most impactful books that I read since, or before I read the Bible. It would be Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov.
Hmm.
Yeah. And it's the same book, 2 different volumes, so it counts as one.
Perfect.
Other books. I think it would be C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity.
Hmm.
It was just... I mean... I struggled a lot at the time with the idea of, okay, what to do with, now that I'm a Christian? What should I do with my inquisitiveness and these other traits that I have that seem so somewhat to go against the idea of, like, you have beliefs and doctrines and things that sort of, kind of in my mind, didn't allow me to think. Or things like that. And it was just reading C.S. Lewis, especially Mere Christianity, it sort of made it so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of, like, profound Christian thought and true, reasonable skepticism, if I might say.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy Keller helped with that too in The Reason for God. Which would probably be my 3rd book, I think.
Mm-hmm.
These would be the 3 books that I take with me on an island. But, yeah. But that idea, it just helped me a lot. No?
Yeah. Is there... When it comes to your dad...
Mm.
He talks about the harsher times.
Mm.
Has that... Or has he implied that the way he lives today has changed?
Because by the way, maybe I should define the time that time, the latter time of, or say, towards the end of communism, mm-hmm. things in Albania were getting really, really bad. That was about the time that he was a late teenager.
Mm-hmm.
When he was like, I think he graduated from high school by the time the system changed.
Got it.
Or maybe a little bit afterwards. As he was growing up, things were still okay. His dad, my grandpa, which died before I was born,
mm-hmm.
it was, I think, he had a large shop. So he was doing okay, I think,
mm-hmm.
by that time. So he had money, he lived comfortably. He built his second house.
Yeah.
So he was doing okay. So it wasn't too bad. Then I think, I'm not sure exactly when, sometime before that, he died.
Hmm.
I think it was before my dad went to high school or sometime, or when he was a freshman. At that time, it was the same system, so it would be like ninth grade.
I've heard your story a little bit about like your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
You were at a camp.
Right.
And
I heard people talking about Jesus and I started getting curious.
Yeah.
Well, at first I was a little bit against sort of the idea, but the more I learned, the more curious I got. And as I was there at camp, we had already started, it was a 1 week camp. I think the second day, after I heard the message from the night before, I decided to grab a Bible and start reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know what it says. And I had never actually read the Bible. I had read about Jesus and some things about Christianity. But it was, I think, fairly clear to me that I never really knew what it was. Because the more I listened to it, the more it's like, that's not how I pictured it.
Can we pause? So one thing I've always wondered
mm-hmm.
is I grew up in a Christian family. So I was, the Bible was read every day in my house. Like I was always around it. What did Christianity look like to you before that day where you sat down and read the Bible for the first time? What was just this weird fairy tale type story, or what was it?
I imagine that it had to be somewhat like all the other religions. It couldn't just be a special religion. I mean, that's too, how do I say it? It's too unfair to all the other world views.
Yeah.
So I imagine it would be somewhat just like that. And clearly you have this Jesus, this sort of divinely perfect person. But he wouldn't be so judgmental, or he wouldn't be the kind of person that would allow bad things to happen if he were really God. He seemed like, okay, fine, that's like he's like the perfect hero of a story, mm-hmm. I thought. Like, not just an aggressive hero, but a peaceful one and so on. But it's unfair, actually. I thought it was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was said to be divine. So his being good, I thought, was nothing special.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he tried too hard. So I always fancied human heroes, like Alyosha in the Brothers Karamazov,
uh-huh. Yeah.
were humans, but still saints.
So the idea that you got of Christianity, was that mainly through reading, or did people talk about it at all around town?
The village I grew up in was a Muslim village. And automatically you get the feel that Christianity is false and evil,
mm-hmm.
and bad and, you know, not good, let's say. And I wasn't a Muslim, but I still had those feelings in me. I think partly that changed when the war in Syria broke out.
Hmm.
Originally, it was said to be something like the people would go for, because it had all these, like, you know, we have, the Muslims would say,
mm-hmm.
we have our brothers. This is before it became a terrorist organization, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
people would go there and say, we need to fight for the liberty of these free people who are suffering and so on. And that's sort of how ISIS was created, before it became what it is.
Hmm.
But there were a lot of these sort of alluring, more positive messages around it. When it turned out to be another terrorist organization, that was my final sort of disappointment with Islam. That's when I said that, okay, fine, Islam is obviously false.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left those feelings about any positive feelings that I had about Islam aside. And I still sort of kept that, okay, fine, but I didn't want to be too discriminating. So I just said, I'll just keep my negative feelings about Christianity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the question? what did I feel about Christianity before?
Yeah, was it talked about at all around?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I didn't know much. At best, I knew that Jesus was this perfect human who was, or who claimed to be God, and he died on a cross. He was forgiving and he was fair and loving, and but maybe from like books I've read,
mm-hmm.
or
but it wasn't really talked a
no,
lot
it wasn't.
About around like in school or
no
friends
no not at all.
Not until you got to this camp.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of talking about Jesus is a bit awkward, because you always think, like, what is he, a Jehovah's Witness or something?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a normal topic of a conversation to talk about Jesus.
Or just Christianity in general.
Or even Christianity, to say positive things of Christianity in the setting that I grew up, but is also not, I guess, normal.
Mm-hmm. So you're at this camp,
mm-hmm.
you're reading through the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
Well, what happens is I didn't know where to start. I just started at the beginning. And then some other guy sat across from me and said, hey, what's your reading? And that's where we started talking for like 3 hours, I think, for what the Bible is and what does it say. And it was one of the key moments, I think, in my life where I sort of began this journey. The desire was, I think, the seed of it, but it was sort of watered with these conversations. I talked with this guy, Corey Kramer, and he he made me start walking through the Bible, what it is, and started taking me through this journey. Then I talked with some other guys, and I really felt sort of God really drawing me near from that point onward.
Was that, so being someone who's always, well, looking at, well, first of all, reading,
mm-hmm.
any book you can get your hands on, and being, in a sense, viewing things skeptically.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking about like feeling,
mm-hmm.
that God is moving within you.
Mm-hmm.
How is that for someone that is so logical?
It was actually the best, because I thought, okay, fine, I have these feelings, but if it's true, these feelings will sort of measure up with my skepticism. So I'm going to ask every question I can think of before I can believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get everything else out of the way, every doubt and every argument against it. Because if it's true, then it will all measure up. It will all sort of be, it will beat all of the other objections that I can have.
I find that interesting. You mentioned the with basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a feeling, you enjoyed it. Like,
right.
When you went, you really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you got punched,
mm-hmm.
logically you told yourself, this is just going to happen. Not necessarily being punched, but this that feeling of the the result of people acting out of their competitiveness is not going to be worth the feeling. I don't know if is that what you felt.
I've never actually thought of it like that. There's an interesting input there. I didn't imagine it had anything to do with it, but I guess it could.
And I see that in comparison to you when you're becoming a Christian. Mm-hmm. If I can get all these doubts out, the feeling that I can feel by being a Christian, both logically and, well, feelings-based, will be so worth it.
Yeah, I guess at some level I did feel that way. And I definitely, like, even verbally, I would say, I want to ask every question I can think of. And I want to make sure, if this is the right way, I want to make sure to really fully embrace it. Mm-hmm. So I need to be really sure before I can devote my life to Jesus. Mm-hmm. But still, all along the way, I still felt God drawing me near to Him. With every step, there were lots of doubts, lots of tears, but I always felt that it was something that I think was going to happen. I didn't admit it to myself, but I always felt at some point that it was going to happen.
So now you are a Christian, and you mentioned the doubts and
I'm still not at that.
But yeah, you mentioned the doubts leading up to this decision that you're going to make. Mm-hmm. Now you've been a Christian how many years now?
4.5, probably.
Like around 4.5 years. And now you realize that even after you became a Christian, there's still questions that need to be answered. There's still doubts that we have. Mm-hmm. So walk me through, if you have like a method, or walk me through how you deal with doubts today about specific things concerning your faith or the Bible.
One of the encouraging things is that people, when I had questions and I asked people, they directed me to sources which were sort of the perfect ones for the job, like Timothy Keller or William Lane Craig. And whenever I thought about things like what about evolution or other questions, there were these voices, these people who made it make sense or made Christianity sort of not necessarily this thing that has to be either or, but that makes sense within a scientific worldview and so on. So that helped a lot, I think. Now, more and more, I came to believe that because of the transformative power of the Bible, which I really, especially in my first year as a Christian, I was immersed in it. I came to be so transformed and so guided and so believing in the Bible that I made it. Quite soon, but through a process, the center of the guiding center of my worldview. So I was no longer comparing it. I was saying, "This is the Bible, and everything else sort of comes around it." So I wasn't saying you have A and B, and now you have to decide which makes more sense. I was saying you have the Bible, which makes perfect sense in a way. And it guides all the other arguments or thoughts that you can have, or theories. It took a while to get to that point.
Have you met or talked to... because now, 4.5 years later, now you've been involved in many of these camps where you were introduced to truly who Christ is. Have you had conversations with... kids that are similar to you, and how do you deal with those conversations?
It's funny, but I think everyone seems to have their own questions. So I don't think I've had anyone who was at the same spot as I was. Uh-huh. Don't think I've met anyone who's there, but I have met people who've asked questions that I didn't ask but were so interesting. Or even questions that to me were obvious but to them were profound and were sort of really impacting them. Mm-hmm. So I've had a lot of good conversations. But they made me look things up and find answers. Sometimes you automatically have the answer to the questions that people have, guided by the Holy Spirit, gives you the right words to say at the right time. Mm-hmm. There weren't exactly the same questions that I had. I don't think that ever, or I mean, I've used obviously my own experience. I've drawn from my own experience in explaining things to people. But everyone is just so different. It's actually fascinating. Mm.
So, well, we talked a little bit about your upbringing, mm-hmm. a bit. We've talked about your experience basketball and becoming a Christian and that process. So, where are you at today, and where do you see yourself, or where are you going? What's the direction you're going in the next year or so? What's happening with Siri?
Well, right now I finished my bachelor's degree, finished university. As a like in or faith wise, if that's even a word, but in relation to my faith, I'm at this point where it's like I feel the weight of my maturity. Which is to say, I know that doesn't make any sense. But let me just explain. I feel that the more that I grow, the more I understand my own sinfulness and brokenness. Because when I became Christian, I had very high expectations about myself. Mm-hmm. So I guess the more I grow, the more I understand that that's just not going to happen. I'm just not going to become this perfect Christian, mm-hmm. or this perfect person.
One quote I've always loved is like, the more I know, the less I know.
Yeah.
Would you say that's part of what you're saying, or
that? Well, yes. If no is, I guess the understanding of one's brokenness. Mm-hmm. Then yes.
Yeah. So, in this next year, how are you hoping to further your understanding of yourself in the scriptures?
Well, as the Apostle Paul said in his letter to Timothy, Christ came to save sinners, of whom I am foremost. And that's very encouraging, because look at this brilliant theologian who wrote a good part of the Holy Scriptures, and he can say that he is the foremost of sinners. He doesn't have the weight to be perfectly holy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to carry that weight, because he knows Christ bore the wages, or paid the wages for his sin. Mm-hmm. He bore the burden for him, and he could rest believing in him. Mm-hmm. And we know for sure that he didn't take that responsibility lightly, but he also didn't take it on himself to have expectations about himself that were unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So I guess to grow more and more in accepting that I'm actually a sinner. I mean, you can say that that's been part of my doctrine since I became a Christian. But really, truly believing it in your own heart, I guess it takes a while.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to finish up here shortly, but before we finish up, mm-hmm. here's a question. Hmm. So if you knew let's say you had one day to live, and you know exactly when you were going to die, someone handed you a piece of paper, the pencil, and you were allowed to write three things down, like three pieces of advice, what would those three things be?
The first thing would be, don't bother spending a lot of money burying me. Or, no. I guess what I would say is, I would try to write something or think of something to write to my family, maybe. To tell them that I'm not to worry about my departure because I've been saved by Christ and I have no fear of death and that I'll be with him forever. Hoping that they would, that would be sort of something that would help them out, help them realize even more the source of why I take it this way, why I took it this way. Mm-hmm. And next, I'm not sure what else. It's one of the things that I'm concerned with is my family. Mm-hmm. They've been great and sort of, they haven't caused problems with me becoming a Christian mm-hmm. and all. And they're somewhat opened, but they're not at the point where they can say, I'll consider it.
Yeah.
They're just like, okay, fine, you do your own thing, we'll do ours. Yeah. And that's kind of, that just saddens me. So if there's one thing I could do, I'd just try in any way that I would to help them, draw them near.
Well, thanks so much. This has been awesome. Thanks for sharing your awesome knowledge of different books and just the experiences that you've had. And I personally feel very encouraged by you and blessed to get to know you and encouraged to strive to know Christ in the same, in a similar way where you strive, let's say, every day to learn more and more and more and more about not only him, but yourself and how you can serve him through knowing the weight of the sinfulness that we have mm-hmm. and the weight of what he's done to remove that sin. So thank you so much, Sergi. It's been awesome.
Thanks. It's been an honor.
I want to say thank you to those who gave this episode a listen. Tune in next week for the next episode of Stories of Albania.